This is Brandon Sonye.
And Brandon Margolis.
You know, the Brandons.
Writers of number 10, Dembe Zuma.
You're listening to The Blacklist Exposed on Golden Spiral Media.
So, Aaron, are we going to do this podcast or just stare at each other in awkward silence? All right, be that way. Welcome to The Blacklist Exposed. I'm Agent Troy Heinrichs.
I could do that all day. And I'm Agent Aaron Peterson. And if our stories are written in flesh, mine are about 20 pounds overweight, just so you know. Thanks for joining us once again as we discuss 2 hours of The Blacklist today, which included number 10 on The Blacklist, Dembe Zuma, written by the Brandons and directed by Jean Segonzek, as well as the Mr. Kaplan origin story many of you asked for, entitled Requiem, written by Daniel Cerone and directed by Terrence O'Hara. Show notes and other intel for this episode of The Blacklist Exposed can be found at theblacklistexposed.com.
If you all are listening to this immediately after it hit your podcast player, C2E2 is here, and not only will John Bokenkamp be here, but also Aram, and recently announced, because now she is out of hiding, Mr. Kaplan will be at the panel today. We're looking forward to seeing you at 3 o'clock in room S402. That's today, April 22nd, if you are coming. If you can't make it or are listening to this after April 22nd, keep your ears peeled for a special podcast, as we'll have the audio from the event.
We will?
We will.
Oh, I didn't know we were going to do that. So yay for everybody.
Surprise!
But if you want to see them, they'll be there. So do that.
Yeah.
And then, you know, since Kaplan is out of holding, or whatever you said.
Hiding. Sorry. I was like, hiding.
No, it's cool. I didn't know it was a word, but whatever. All right. Well, our last profiling question of the week was a simple one. Did Dembe poison Red?
I told you he didn't.
And we limited it to a yes or no answer, and by not much surprise, the no's have it. 80% to 20%. But, it is a trick question, because we're technically, he did not put the poison in the whiskey. He did hand Red the drink. So technically, I mean, everybody's right.
That's right. We're all friends in the Blacklist fandom.
Everybody's a winner. You get a ribbon, and you get a ribbon, and you get a ribbon.
That sounds like my Pee Wee League.
I don't.
Different topic.
So many ways I could take that. All right. Next week, however, we want to hear from you. Whose side does Dembe take in the war with Kaplan? That's an interesting question. It looks like he already picked one, I would say, but he was very sympathetic to Kate.
Exactly. Very upset with Red for doing what he did. So it'll be interesting to see what those responses are.
Yeah. And I want to tell you guys, if we miss anything this week, we've had a lot going on because we're doing that panel. So I don't want to hear a bunch of, you know, you guys missed this one little nitpick. I don't want to hear it. You send those letters to Troy. Troy wants to hear it. I don't want to hear it.
Whatever we don't get to today, because we are pressed for time, we will definitely tie back after next week's episode. So we will make sure we cover everything in full.
I didn't write that in blood. I didn't say that. Wait, don't hold me to your standard.
I am going to hold you to everything this week, including something you wrote on Facebook, which we'll get into because we got to cover. So let's unearth all the secrets hidden in these 2 hours with our case profile.
What about what I wrote on? Is it going to be referencing when I dressed up as Snow White?
No, not that one. I'm talking about your Halloween escapades.
Oh, boy. All right. Well, in this 2 hour event, we had two episodes that went completely different directions. First up, we have Red and Liz hunting down Dembe through the Sanctum Corporation and a murdered associate, Richard Finkman, while Samara and Wrestler work on Aram's angle. Because Aram has been snatched up by Dembe and forced to help him originally, but then Aram, being the good guy that he is, says, you know what, I will help you because I can tell you're an innocent man by looking in those beautiful eyes of yours. With a little help from Glenn, the paths converge and they find Aram and Dembe, just as Dembe uncovers the truth. Catherine Nemec is alive. Now, I think we all knew who Catherine Nemec was going to be, but were you surprised at all?
No, not surprised at all. And we talked about this, about telegraphing versus predictability and things of that nature. This is the situation where I'm glad that it turned out to be what it was, because, yes, we may have predicted it, but that's because we know then they have a plan for the show, and that just makes the show that much more enjoyable because they got to the same place we already thought they were going.
Yes, I think we all thought it was going to end up there, and it just got there in an exciting fashion. We even got the hunter back.
Woohoo! Leon Rippey is awesome.
Blows up his own cabin.
That was fantastic.
His own cabin. So, who is this biatch killing everyone? She is Dr. Sophia Gallo, a prison consultant who works with parolees. Daniel Makimoto was disappeared by the Sanctum Corporation, which is kind of cool. I mean, they were a bee organization. They were a honey factory or whatever. And then one person came to them, and then another and another, and they ended up being a front for criminal empires, like just as hiding criminals. And now the Sophia Gallo wants everyone dead because her parents, Tony and Maria Lopez, her real name is Vanessa Lopez, were killed, basically. And she's going through each client, taking out everyone until she finds the ones responsible. Because in her mind, everybody is guilty. Now, before we get to the bees, what did you think of this concept? I actually thought this was a cool blacklister.
I thought it was a great blacklister. And unfortunately, I have not completely finished up the Beekeeper book. And I was like, okay, is this going to tie into the Beekeeper book? Because that would be interesting. Like, that was the story of the parents. And then here's the story of the daughter kind of thing. I don't know if that's the case or not, because that would be cool if it was. But overall, I think that this concept of a WITSEC for criminals, that's definitely plus one in my book. I guess the question is why would Red... long time waiting. Why would Red hide Dembe's family through this criminal empire organization? Wouldn't that actually put Dembe's family potentially in danger, which in this case it did, if Vanessa would have found them, and they really would have nothing to do with it because it wasn't that they were involved in the parents getting killed in this regard. But overall, I thought it was fantastic. I love that we have, again, reference to a fire with a child. I think she was a teenager technically when the fire happened, but a fire, scars, all of that, foreshadowing or backshadowing or cross-shadowing, however you want to call it. Just a lot of good blacklist tie-ins with this case of the week this week.
Yeah, and now we're going to get to the bees. Okay, this lady has a bee bra, which is pretty fantastic. Now, I believe those are real. I read that all the bees were real. Is that true? Do you know?
I have no idea. I didn't catch up on any of this stuff because we've been so busy, but it sure looked real. I mean, I was like, good for her. Like, don't move. Stand still.
How close were you looking?
I was worried.
Huh?
I was you worried.
Perv. The... I am, just so you know, I am phobic of bees, legitimately phobic. So I wanted to throw my television through the window. And of all the blacklisters, we've had so many creepy and terrifying ones. Just the fact that this lady covers herself in bees, I was most scared of her.
Yes, that's right.
True
not,
story.
Not the Stewmaker, not the Courier.
Nope. Nope.
Not the Alchemist. None of those people. The bee lady scares Aaron.
Troy, once, when my daughter was a baby, I was in the car and a bee flew into the car. She was a baby. And I pride myself on being, not many great things, but I am a pretty good dad. And as soon as the bee flew in, I drove over to the side of the road and got out of the car with her fully still in there because I couldn't make myself be in the car with the bee. That's how horrible and terrified I am of bees. I am phobic. If you ever want to take me down, if I ever become a supervillain, bees.
Oh, man. I feel for you. I do.
That was a very long pause. Like, wow, that's the saddest and stupidest thing I've ever heard.
Why? Because I've heard the story before, so I was letting people reflect on that about how much of a weakling you are.
But, I was stung like 130 times as a kid, so it's not like it doesn't come from somewhere. You know what I mean?
But when those bees came on the screen, I immediately started texting Aaron. I was like, don't look. Don't look. Run away. I felt so bad for you.
I'm like, why did you have to go there? Anything else? Like cockroaches, that would have been fine, but bees freak me out. Okay. All right. Well, that's enough of that. You guys don't care about my drama. The second hour is all about Catherine Nemec, who we come to find out is the real name of who, Troy?
One Mr. Kaplan.
What? Yes. And we will come back to her as we go through the characters, because the entire episode is basically her biography.
Now, I want someone from the group, someone from the listeners, to tell me, because I've been looking for it. I can't find it. And I don't know if it's because so many people talked about the cast list on IMDb over and over and over again for the last 8 weeks of who was coming up on the show.
You know how hard it's been to avoid spoilers for this episode? Because people keep trying. Yeah, and I appreciate that people are fans, but they keep tagging me in the cast list. I don't want to know that stuff. don't tag me in that. I don't want to know. I never read it because I don't want to be spoiled. It's nothing personal. Just I don't want to know. And everybody kept, did you see this coming in this episode? I sure didn't, but now I did. Thanks. That kind of stuff. So back to hard to keep spoiler free on these.
It is. So back to my question, or my ask for the audience, is that I swear I've seen Catherine Nemec's name come up in the show somewhere in the last four seasons. Like, this name isn't new to the rest of us. And I don't know if that's just because I heard Catherine Nemec from the IMDb posts on everything, or and I've convinced myself it's been in the show, or if it truly was in the show. Because we knew that it was Kate, right? Kate was Kaplan's name. I swear we've heard Catherine Nemec in the show before. So if you guys know that, let me know. I can't find it. So, yeah.
And she had a sister, which we don't see anything about in this episode. She did have a sister. I remember referring to her.
Yeah, Wisconsin. Yeah, the one that took her, saw the people... bodies in the cold and the trunk and all that stuff. And
right, so there's a story there somewhere too that we're still not, because they don't even reference the sister at all that I saw.
Right, she might have already been in witness protection at the she probably would have gone witness protection later, because if she comes to Red's employ and then Red's the one that got her into witness protection, so the sister probably is somebody that she visits every now and then, so not important to this week's particular time period of the story.
A lot of people were I had several messages from listeners saying Troy's mom theory is shot out of the water. Would you agree with that?
Oh man, it's too early in the show to get into that yet.
All right, well, let's get into characters then. So let's start with music. We had a lot of good songs, including the last song, which made me giggle.
It was fun. But surprisingly, there was no actual songs of note that I could pick out during the Dembe Zuma hour. All the music budget was spent in the second hour in Requiem, as you could tell, because they were very popular songs. We hear two versions of I Will Survive, the original from Gloria Gaynor in Kate's Past, as it transitions to the present. That was a great, great switch from the girl putting on the glasses and then switching to Kaplan. That was fantastic. And then, of course, we have the cover from Cake in the present while she was working in the hotel room.
It's a cool cover, by the way.
It's a great cover. We also heard Sophie B. Hawkins' Damn, I Wish I Was Your Lover during the bar scene with Annie Kaplan. And
please don't ever sing that again.
I tried not to sing it. It happens. We then hear Small Town from Blues Saraceno as Kat contemplates moving to Amarillo with Annie. And then the finale over the ice rink, we hear Nancy Sinatra's These Boots Are Made for Walking, which was so good.
I giggled.
Perfect.
I giggled on that one. So, yeah. So, what did you think of the music choices for Kaplan? Because Kaplan had a lot of specific songs that obviously referenced the character. So, what did you feel about the choices?
Well, I love the I Will Survive, right? You know, first I was afraid, I was petrified. I don't know how I would live without you by my side. I mean, that was totally referencing her relationship with Katerina. And then you have the whole relationship with Red. So, I mean, the words for these songs were just perfect matches for the situation she was in. And the fact that it's the kind of more love song, kind of woman power in the front end, which, of course, it's woman power since it's Kate and Katerina together. But then you have kind of more of the rougher Cake version when she's all angry and, you know, digging up the bodies out of the wall. I think it was just a perfect mashup of music for this.
Yeah, and I guess I got to apologize, because when we do the openings, you know, we always joke back and forth, how do you want to open the show? And Troy originally had a Michael Jackson reference where he said, Annie, are you okay? Are you okay, Annie? Which I thought was funny, but I thought you were referencing the actress who plays Janet. And I told him, take that out. Nobody's gonna understand that. And now that I'm actually going through, I'm like, oh, Annie Kaplan, my God, I'm the dumb one.
Yes, you
are. I'm the dumb this week.
Because then Aaron's response was going to be, and now we know how Kaplan became to work for a smooth criminal.
Damn it.
Oh, well.
I'm sorry. I screwed you up on that.
I never even thought about Annie Heist for that. That's funny.
What I thought, though. I'm like, man, nobody's going to get that. I mean... You know, I mean, it'll take a minute to understand that you're referencing the ad. I don't understand, Troy. It just doesn't make... And now I'm the dumb one. I just feel dumb now.
So way to go, dumb. There's one.
All right, let's go to Glenn. Glenn, in terms of characters, I'll start with Glenn. He has a ball. Apparently, he monitors traffic cams, and he can make them rewind. You know, he's got a server somewhere just handling traffic cams.
That's not illegal at all or anything.
No, good for him. And he's conducting business, and apparently Liz is like, all right, well, it benefits us. We'll let this slide.
After I thought she was going to punch him in the face for calling her toots. I was like, way to go, Glenn.
She should have, honestly. She should have. And conducts business in student driver cars. I thought that was a great twist. That was really funny. I like that. This is not this has no discretion at all, or whatever Red said when he got in. But the comment about very Edgar Rice Burroughs, that was a laugh out loud moment. I don't laugh out loud very often, but I laughed out loud. You know, having a black servant, that's very Edgar Rice Burroughs. That was nice. So it's always nice to have Glenn back because he says things that shouldn't be said, but are always funny to hear.
Well, and he's totally not the politically correct person because of the whole toots thing. But then he also has this lady in the front, and Red's talking about discretion. It's like, the lady doesn't understand anything you're saying because she doesn't speak any English. So it's full discretion. I mean, it was completely not politically correct at all.
It was not. It was not. I had fun. Every time Glenn's in a scene, it's fun. Like, it's hard for him to not be fun. We got Janet this week. You've been wanting more Janet. Damn it, Janet. So are you happy? You got a little Janet. Are you surprised, I guess, is the question. Because last I heard, you know, Aram had started to forgive her, and they realized there's a little something there. But she still kind of was a, you know, she was a little Katerina Rostova to his Red, you know?
I mean, in a way, I think they have a checkered beginning, but at the same time, doesn't most relationships have some kind of checkered beginning? I mean, there's a checkered beginning.
Checkered.
I'm sure.
That's how you're going to play this. It's a checkered beginning when she was using him to spy on him.
Isn't that what Tom did to Liz and then Red did to the, I mean, it's the MO for the show at this point.
Man, dating sucks in this universe.
I mean, the sadder part about it is the fact that I almost thought we were going to get a Psycho reference there for the front end. I thought that was actually kind of fun. I was waiting for like a remake or something.
That would have been weird, Troy. That would have been weird. So are you glad that you got the Annie as Janet back?
I am super stoked that the two of them have scenes together. Not her and Aram necessarily, but her and Samar. Oh my gosh, did the Brandons nail every single scene, and the two of them back and forth. Just, I laughed so hard on those scenes. It was fantastic.
Or we can just sit. We can neither talk about that we're into the same guy, or we can just sit here and stare in silence. And she enables him to have fun, which we'll talk about in a second. But do you want her involved more as the show goes on, or is this a relationship? Like, a lot of people are like, all right, let's work out the Aram and Samar thing. Let's get them together or not get them together, but let's pick a side. How do you feel on that?
I actually, you know, I'm okay with Saram splitting up at the end of this show, at the end of the first hour. I think we've toyed with it enough that it's like they're pining after each other. We already know that they're feeling for each other. And I think this is a perfect case in point. You know, Aram loved Samar, clearly. And Samar, it took way too long to pick up on the clues and make her move. And if you wait too long, sorry, guys are going to move on. It's just the way it is. So I think this is a perfectly reasonable relationship example. It's not an over-TV hyped thing just to drive story. I think this truly happens. You know, guys pine, girls finally give in, girls too late. Totally happens. So I'm okay with it. Now, how they work Janet's character in from a story perspective going forward, I love to see her. I mean, every time Annie's on the screen, I mean, I smile because she's constantly smiling. So it gives you some kind of like a pickup mood.
It's infectious.
It is. And I think that's great. But how many times are they going to have her come into the post office to use the computers that Cooper doesn't want her to use? I mean, that will get tiring after a while if that's the case. But I think there's ways that you could get, you know, Annie either to like help from the apartment or something, like Aram's in the field and Aram says, hey, Annie, I need like an assist on this kind of thing. I mean, maybe there could be a cool like break in, hack something that they could use Annie for that. So Janet for that.
Damn it, Janet. All right, let's move on to Aram. I just want to point out this episode aired on 420. And first thing we see is Aram is smoking a little weed. We assume. I mean, it could have been just Annie's, but it sure, you know, he's guilty.
Could have just been a piece of art that he picked up. It looked nice. I want to, you know,
really?
Spruce up
the art
place.
Had used, it was smoked, and apparently it came full of used marijuana and had a lighter next to it. But yeah, it could be an art piece, sure.
Sure. Yeah.
I mean, that was a nice joke, by the way. Well, that's a nice joke.
It was. And this isn't the first time, obviously, that he's, you know, dabbled. So we know that he's a previous participant.
Yeah, he's taken some hits before. I just thought it was funny on 420. We've got a bong joke. I thought that was great. It was very subtle, but not so subtle. So I like that. And we start with them in the shower, which I've been told by several of my female friends, they would like Aram to have more shower time. And one in particular was really bummed. My buddy's wife was really bummed that we didn't get to see his bum.
That is network TV.
I'm just saying. I was asked to please bring that up. So I'm bringing it up. They were depressed. They didn't get to see a little Aram bum. Hey, what are you going to do? Me too. I was so looking forward to that. It was high on my list. All right, so he's abducted by Dembe and initially refuses to help Dembe, which I admire because he actually picked a side of loyalty. He wasn't going to betray Red, which I find interesting. Were you surprised by that at all?
I was a little bit, because you know that their relationship has grown over the years, and he definitely has a thing for Raymond in a way, but at this time, I think he would be on Team Reddington. If he wasn't working for the post office, he would actually go seek employ inside of Reddington's organization. So how the two of these guys don't understand that initially, because Dembe captures them. I mean, I suppose Aram's point of view is that Dembe was the one that poisoned him, but it's just weird when you think about it. It's hard to see these two guys working together and take it with a grain of salt, knowing that these two actors specifically on the show, when they started out, were two characters that might have only been in one or two episodes and never crossed paths. And here we finally get them working together in a scene. I think this is just great for both Hisham and Amir over the years to be able to have a scene where they actually get to work together. And it was fun watching them go back and forth. And again, Dembe does so much without words, right? He just slumps down on the ground and says, "Oh, I can't believe I can't get into this locker, which has 10,000 doors." And just his emotion just shows that he's crippled, that he can't help his master in this case. Mm-hmm. And I think that's where Namir's like, okay, I got an idea. Which, that was fantastic. The breaking into the place in order to use the server farm and, you know, agents Moshabahi and Zuma. He's just yelling at Dembe. That was so funny.
And Samar's like, open the door. I can't. I can't or won't. You're so going to be in trouble when this is over. And apparently everything's going to be on him. Anything goes wrong, it's on him. He does help Dembe, and I don't know if we knew this, but they do explain that he's Muslim and Jewish. I don't know if we knew that for sure. I can't remember if that was ever a plot point, but now you know if you needed to know, I guess. I didn't really care. He's just Aram.
Yeah. Yeah, and it was a little weird. It's like, okay, yeah, whatever. But at the same time, I don't know if it actually enhances the story at all to know that in particular.
Might be fun to come back to later. I don't know how, but it could be.
Unless it was a specific day, given that we know that Samar is from the Middle East, so she's bringing it up in that moment to get another dig in at Samar, potentially.
Well, he's the one that ultimately finds the name, Catherine Nemec. And we find out more about her as we move on, so we'll get there in a minute. So Aram definitely found the name, which led Dembe to the old spot. The old Kaplan spot where she was shot in the face and left for dead and survived. And I just want to point out, I told you he did not poison Red. I told you. When that episode aired, I told you. I think on this very podcast, I said, I do not believe that Dembe poisoned Red. So, bam. I want to be a master detective.
What I do love about it, though, is that they set up enough of that with Dembe going to Liz and saying, you know, Red shot Kate, and he having all this, like, you know, we call it emo moments about how you shouldn't have done that. You know, what about Kate? Why are you using her death and things of that nature? So they set up enough of it in the previous four episodes or so to make you actually think that it could be possible. So kudos on the storytelling for that. Even though none of us would ever think that the man who saved his life, got him out of Mombasa or the Mombasa cartel, and just raised him as a son, and especially after the box and Ansel Garrick, none of us would ever believe Dembe could do that. But the fact that there was a little small gray element there, I love it. It was good.
That's not true. A lot of people did think it was Dembe. We not saw a that lot all of people. Over.
80-20 rule. 80-20 rule is almost like 100% in business.
Yeah, but that's like 8 weeks later. When it first aired, a lot of people thought that it was Dembe. They were all, I can't believe Dembe did that. That son of a bitch. You know, and I think as it went on, people like, it couldn't have been Dembe. Like once you... It's the moment. You're in the moment, so you're kind of passionate about the moment. I can't believe it. And then the more you think about it, like, whoa, this could be a setup. And so I think that position changed. But when it first, there was a lot of people on that bandwagon, my friend. A lot of people.
You should have took an instant poll. And then see how the polls varied.
Instant poll. Well, he kidnaps Rama. It doesn't really help him look innocent. But he's trying to get his help to find out who set him up. And that leads him to the truth, because he goes to the grave where Kaplan is, and he gets that horrible call from Red. I mean, how terrifying would that be, knowing that Red Reddington is there with your daughter and granddaughter after he thinks you killed him or tried to kill him? How terrifying would that be?
Right. He's like sitting there yelling at him like, "I'm going to come find you, Dembe." And Dembe's like, "Shut up, Red. I got something to tell you."
Let me tell you what happened. And then he tries to tell him the truth, but the hunter gets him. Which I thought it was funny that we actually came back to that. I realized they had forged a bond of sorts. I didn't know that the bond still existed. But as Red explains in when he talks to Kaplan, she has that ability to charm people, to win their trust, so to speak. And it sounds like she did it with him. I mean, he was willing to give up his life for her.
Yeah, in just a short period of time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's pretty impressive. So kudos on them. That was really cool. A really cool way to bring back the hunter, because it was kind of this character. Like, is this going to lead to anywhere? Because he's kind of the guy that helps her stay alive, I guess. But really, outside of that, he doesn't do a whole lot. And now it paid off. It does pay off.
And I love the taking the arrow out of his leg and stabbing him in the leg. I thought that was probably one of the best Dembe moves ever. I was like,
yes,
yeah,
that was kick ass. I'm like, what's he going to do? Oh, he's going to do that. Poor guy's going to get an infection. He might have survived the blast, but that infection's going to get him. All right, so ultimately they find the truth, and that leads them to a couple to Kaplan, but we're going to talk about that in a second. See, we're getting through some of the minor plots so we can get to the big plots. Now, Dembe is obviously off the blacklist. Now, should he have been at number 10 since he so quickly came off of it? I would assume he came off of it.
There was a theory going around that everything that's in the top 10 are the characters on the show. So everybody's got a number. That's like, you know, Samar's got a number, Ram's got a number, and they're all the top 10.
What was Samar's number?
Not yet. They don't have a number yet. Oh. But if they were to reveal a number, everybody that we know is in the top 10.
Because Tom was like 4, right?
7.
7? Was he 7?
Which is why he got Tom Bond. It was the 007 thing.
I think number 1 will be either Liz or Katerina Rostova or Red Reddington, one of those three.
Yeah.
2 of them might be the same person by some people's account. So
by more people's account than last time.
Some people's account. Let's not get carried away. We'll get there. Oh, boy. Cooper, you know, Cooper and Wrestler don't have a lot to do this week, but Cooper does have a nice scene where he basically tells Red, "No, we're not going to do it your way."
No.
And I thought that was pretty fantastic. That he's standing up to Red. He's continuing to stand up to, you know, "Hey, we did it your way. It didn't work. We're doing it my way now."
And I can't wait to see what the fallout of this is going to be with Cooper, because of the fact that we're going to have the bodies, and eventually those are going to get turned up somehow, I'm sure, as this war progresses. And we're going to have to see if if Main Justice is already feeling like Red's a liability. They're going to really think he's a liability if this stuff comes to light.
Yeah, and how do you feel? How do you feel about that? Because, I mean, it's not like they don't know he's already a murderer. So when we get to, and we'll talk more about it when we get to those characters, but how do you feel the post office is going to react? Is it one thing to not know everything he's done when you find all the bodies and you're like, wow, now we know all the stuff he has done?
Well, I mean, if we go with past precedent, we'll have Cooper say, yeah, he's an ass and I can't stand him, but look at all the good that he's done. I mean, look at all the people we have captured because he was here. And Liz is going to be like, but he's the only one that knows anything about my past. Therefore, I need to keep him around.
Well, I think Kaplan could actually, she could fill us in a lot of blanks now. You know,
she could
fill in all the blanks for Liz and let her know what's going on. You want to know what happened and what really happened? Sit down, girl. I'm going to tell you.
And I guess, is that what you really want to have happen in these last, 5 hours of season 4? This is the answer arc. Get it all out there on the table and then see what season 5, if it comes, leads us into.
Yes, in an interview with John Bokenkamp in Entertainment Weekly, which was referring to this episode, he does say that we will have some answers, more answers, by the end of the season. And I would assume that would be part of it, because Kaplan and Liz have a relationship. She really, obviously, I mean, everything she does it for her, as Bryan Adams would say. And I think Liz would not rat her out to anyone. Even though she's coming after Red, I don't think Liz would rat her out.
You secretly say Bryan Adams, and I was like, man, are they? The whole time I was like, they're going to use the Bryan Adams song, aren't they?
I wouldn't be against it.
I wouldn't be. I was waiting for it to show up.
If it just, everything I do. Like the, okay, like that it, might be a cheesy jump the shark moment, but I'd still be into it.
It would have been perfect for the bar.
Lord. All right. Wrestler has a great chase scene. I really like the chase scene. And he doesn't get much to do in this episode, but he has a lot of clever looks. Like when he finds out about Janet being at the apartment, his look at Samara like, oh, snap. It's about to get real. I thought that was quite clever. And I think he was going to shoot Dembe. I really do.
He almost did once before.
Mm-hmm. Do you think he was going to shoot him through that glass?
Maybe. If he had to, he's got to do his job, right? He's got to do what he has to do to get him taken down.
Mr. doing his job. Yep.
I don't think the glass would have shattered, but...
I don't either. I think it looked bulletproofish.
Super rooms are highly protected.
Yeah. All right. Samar is going to beat Janet down. I think at some point she's going to have to kick Janet's ass. What do you think?
She doesn't care what anybody thinks. Mm-hmm. So therefore, I think she's going to let it roll.
That was a woman scorned is what that was.
Oh, you think?
Yeah.
I felt the ice come right through the TV and in my veins.
I thought she played that great. I don't really. When he does, Aram does his little speech. And, you know, we've seen these on the TV, you know, on TV shows so many times. And people either don't say anything or they just walk away contemplating what they just saw. I loved her retort. I just thought that was a fantastic retort. I don't really care what you admire. You blew it. You know, it was basically all she was saying. You just blew it. You had an opportunity and you blew it yet again. We're done.
And that fits her character so perfectly because she would be the one to do something like that compared to other female characters we've seen on TV before. So perfectly mm-hmm. written there once again.
Yeah. Now, some people are mad at Samar. I have seen this online where people were having
a... Because she took too damn long. Yes, we're pissed at her. We wanted,
I'm not pissed at her.
We wanted Saram to be together for freaking 3 seasons now, and she took too long. So, yeah, we're all mad at her.
I'm not mad at her. Can I just point out that the characters are completely different? Aram wears his heart on his sleeve. Literally. I mean, his heart is actually on his sleeve as we speak. Like, he just straps it on there.
Unless he's not wearing any in the shower, but okay.
Then it's on his elbow. I don't know where he puts it on that little thing that hangs over the shower thing. But Samar is a very deeply introverted character. She buries it all deep. She doesn't like to talk about her feelings. And that's her character. That's who her character is. There's nothing wrong with that. So I don't dislike Samar. I get it, man. She's just a tough nut to crack. Not really Aram's fault either. But I don't think that makes her a bad person. No? Yeah? No?
Maybe.
You still hate her. You're still mad at her.
I'm not. I mean, I'm personally not mad at her. I think that the progression.
She's not really. She's not real. So.
Well, yeah.
I mean, she's just a character.
The progression of the character, I think, is completely natural and normal. And her response was totally valid. At the same time, I was like, don't you hurt my Aram. I was like, that's really cold. Go walk away. I don't like you anymore. But at the same time, it's completely valid. Completely valid.
I'll tell you what, in this instance, I was totally on her side because I'm like, you are a dum-dum for going back to her to begin with. I just think that was, I don't care how much fun she is. She is a bad person and she's just dangerous and I don't recommend it.
But so, he has a great explanation for it though, because he says,
nope.
He says, yeah, I'm into the bad girls. So he goes back to the bad girls and he's just, I just can't handle your intensity. It's true. I mean, she's intense.
Yeah, that's why I like her. She's intense. Stares through your soul. I like it. All right.
And then we'll steal your computer under your nose and go behind your back.
Lord.
And I tell you weren't any good.
Okay. Well, Liz, you know, surprisingly on a show that has an entire hour devoted to how Masha got to where she was to a degree, we don't really get a whole lot more on Liz. We don't find a whole lot more, except that as a kid, she was pretty fluent in Russian, but she doesn't seem to remember that.
Which goes into the whole mind-altering techniques from Luther Braxton.
Right.
I'm sure that has something to do with that. Or the conditioning. Because the biggest thing about that second hour is everybody's like, oh, what about this? What about that? And they didn't show this, and they didn't show that. And they're trying to piece together all the white space or the black space, whatever you want to call it, of the stuff we didn't see. You know, we don't know how long the American, Raymond, stole Masha and how long he was living over in how long she was living in America before Katerina was able to get over there and get to them. Mm-hmm. So there might be time periods in there that were, because we did see the, you know, she was this old, then it was a couple years later. But if we have to assume that all of that is happening when she is 4 years old, that's one thing. But again, we're assuming it because it's not on the screen. John has always said, only judge a show based on what you're told on the screen. So we can't fill in those gaps of time and assume certain things are happening. Because everybody's assuming it was like within a 2 week span or something like that.
Yeah, everybody's making the time up. I mean, there is a moment where she says it's been a week since she talked to her. So on that call, it had been a week, but you don't really know when that all happened. So you don't know. There's a lot of discrepancy. There is some debate as to where the time period is. But in this, back to Liz, and because we're coming to them. Hang tight on those characters. She does learn that Kate is alive. You can tell she's emotional about it. I thought Megan played that scene very beautifully. She kept her composure, but also her emotion, you know, that single tear down the cheek, I thought was very well done. And that's, man, I can't wait to see where that goes. That's a really cool storyline that they've got to play out for the rest of the year. Although it makes me wonder if Kate's going to survive this year.
Well, and that's
going to be hard to keep her character alive.
That would be the great tipping point, right? Liz finds out Kate was the nanny. Right, Kaplan was the nanny, and then she ends up getting killed because she's the big bad, right? It's got to happen. All signs are pointing to Kaplan should not survive the end of this season.
Yeah, but they don't always do what we want them to do, we think they're going to do. Hold tight. We'll see what happens. I didn't say what we want them to do because I love Kaplan. I don't want her to go anywhere. So we'll just see how this plays out.
Well, since you mentioned that, postulate this with me.
I always tell you, stop using big words, man. I don't want to read.
Okay, theorize this with me.
No, I know what it means. I just don't want it. All right, go.
Let's say it gets to the end of the season, and we're all saying, you know, Kaplan's pretty much a goner based on the events. Mm-hmm. Would you be shocked? Would this be a cool twist? Say season 5 is picked up and blah, 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 blah. Would it be cool? And granted, this would completely crush my hopes and dreams because the mother theory would be dead at this point. But would it be cool if Katerina's still alive, shows up in the finale, Katerina and Kaplan take out Red, Red dies, and we go into season 5 with Katerina as the main protagonist / antagonist?
Oh. You mean Spader's out completely?
Yeah.
No.
No? Uh-huh. Okay.
No, that's a bad move. I think that would be bad for the show. Let's be honest. I mean, we love all these other characters, but Spader's Red Reddington, and he is the Blacklist. Now, if he dies in the final episode, and I'm sure they can do that in a way that justifies the story, totally fine with it. Or maybe even the episode before the last one, and then it's Liz like becoming like assuming the mantle or something. Maybe that could be it. I don't know. But to have a whole season of Blacklist without Red, I don't think would work. I think that would be a struggle. Both for the network and the showrunners, as well as for the actual it being in the show itself.
Okay. It was just something I was toying with in my head. No. Would it be cool to have like a Katerina to resume those duties?
Well, in your theory, it would technically be the same person, so that would be hard to do. But no, I don't think that would work. I don't. Sure. You'd have to have one hell of an actor to play the modern day Katerina, were she still alive, to do that.
Yeah.
And man, that would be hard press. But Liz, I think we're going to get a lot more out of Liz coming up. This is going to be interesting. It's going to be a gas, so to speak.
I just love the fact that Liz and Red were back together, working together. I think that was, you know, sorely missing from the season 1 days. So this was great to see them kind of buddying up through the course of that first hour.
Mhm. All right, let's go to Sam. We got some more on Sam. Is there anything about the Sam arc that surprised you, other than the fact that he's played by Bill Sadler, who I've loved him for years. Yeah, he's been in so many great movies and TV shows. He's great.
And man, he was looking good. Got some aging cream or something going on.
Something. A little hair dye always helps when you correct the hair. You know what I mean?
Right.
Not dye it, correct it.
That's awesome. I totally love the Kearney, Nebraska shout out. I laughed so hard. I was like, he just threw that in there, didn't he? That was pretty funny. Because we knew it was Nebraska, right? They went back to the hospital in Nebraska.
Right.
But the fact that he specifically called out Kearney, I was like, that's great.
Now, I believe there's a line where he says that he was friends with both of them. Is that right? Did I hear it right? Or am I mistaken? I know he's friends with Katarina for a long time friend, but is he also friends with Reddington?
Well, I don't know if that was on the screen or not. There's so much that we've been talking about over the last 2 days. I don't remember what was in the show and what people have said now. But from what I remember of the show, after seeing it 2 or 3 times now, and it looked like Katarina said, take him to Sam. Sam's the person you want to go to. And then clearly, depending on how you want to believe the whole are they the same person or not the same person concept, that Sam would have to know Raymond because Raymond came to find Sam. And there is a plausibility that at some point that Katarina and Raymond, when together, would have had friends, right? American friends like Sam. So there is a potential that, yes, that Sam would have known Reddington. But again, I think that was all off screen. So you're inferring and implying certain things.
Gotcha. Okay. Just checking, seeing where you stood. That's all.
Yeah, as far as like the placement of Liz at that moment, you know, Katarina said, I could trust you. Here's Liz, take her in, which she doesn't do willingly. Right. I think Red at one point had said, you know, Sam was willing to take Liz in specifically. And it didn't seem like he was very willing at first.
He sure wasn't. Mm-mm.
So
I ain't got time for a kid.
So you got to wonder what, you know, is that a continuity thing or is that a story thing? I don't care either way. I just enjoyed the hour because I thought the hour was fantastic. And I'll dig into all the other crap later when I have time. But at the same point, he comes back and he's like, someone wants to say hi to you. Someone wants to meet you. It's Raymond. It's like, what does that man want with me? So,
I don't think I'm like, she did say like he's a traitor and all this other stuff. And I'm like, well, so was Katarina. I don't really know the difference. I mean, they're both traitors to their countries. Mm-hmm. So, but I guess she had the Masha connection on her.
But from a Sam perspective, I don't think there was anything on the screen in the episode that said he knew Raymond.
Okay.
Until he comes back and says, Raymond wants to talk to you and meet with you.
Okay. So we do know that Katarina has good friends. He's known her for a long time.
Correct.
Long time. And he's a grifter. He's a scammer. Didn't want Masha. But until it heats off, she got him. And he apparently stuck it out with her.
Yep.
I mean, he rode it all the way.
And now we know how Liz has her criminal tendencies. Answer. So there was an answer in this episode for all the people. There are no answers. There's an answer. This is how she learned how to steal cars and pickpocket and all that other stuff.
I mean, don't they teach that at the FBI Academy? Isn't that part of training?
It might be. I don't know. I haven't been to Quantico.
I don't know. We'll see if we can get in. NBC's got Quantico. Let's go check it out.
You already failed your physical. You told them you were 20 pounds overweight.
You know what? That hurts, man. Don't bring that back up. Don't bring up my own words. All right, let's go to Red Reddington.
You should have used my opening. Then you wouldn't have had to. Anyways.
You just wanted me to sing a Michael Jackson song. All right, so Red hunts down the bee lady, which we got, then takes him to Dembe's daughter and granddaughter, which we talked about. But in the second episode, we see early Red. Now, everybody else got a different actor to play them as a young one, but Red got James Spader in Shadow. What did you think about the? Is there a reason for that? Is it just because you don't use a young person to play James Spader? You just use Spader.
Well, you use Spader because, you know, technology today is amazing. I mean, look at Rogue One, for example. You bring back Tarkin. You can bring back Leia. I mean,
I don't think those are good examples because those were awful.
But because they were in full daylight. So here's the opportunity. You're in the shadow. You're back there. You don't have to tweak with the CGI as much if they even used it in this scene in particular.
Little film noir there.
Yeah, exactly. And you just see the eyes. You just see a little bit of the mouth. But at the same time, it's in the shadows. Why are they in the shadows? Maybe this is one of these, like, maybe he's not the original Raymond Red Reddington. Maybe this is someone assuming Raymond Red Reddington's persona. Doesn't necessarily have to be the mother theory. It could be any number of people. It could be a KGB agent that's infiltrated because he was following this American and Katarina, and now he's trying to figure out what's going on, and maybe he's working it from the inside. So it's very much a nod to the imposter theory. But it could be that. You never know.
All right. Well, we'll get there. We find out that Katarina was a traitor to two countries. The only way to protect Liz, according to Young Red, is to rise up as a greater threat than all of them. So now we know why Red became a master criminal. There's an answer.
Let me ask you this question. What does it mean to be a traitor? Like, what's the definition of traitor? How can she be a traitor to two countries?
Go against your country's interest.
But it's not her country. it would have been Raymond's country. Her, she was Russian. She was KGB.
Hey, I don't write it. All right. I just read it. So that's just what they said. Well, I mean, she was a traitor to Russia, but then she came to America. So technically, did she seek solace in America? I don't know.
Oh, snap. What if she was like CIA planted as a KGB agent? So she was like Sidney Bristow, double life kind of thing. In which case, then
everything leads back to Alias with you, doesn't it?
It totally does. But what if she was what if she was American originally? Because that's why. Because it goes back to Dom, right? We've been sitting there like Dom doesn't seem very Russian. So if Dom lived on a farm and he had access to buttermilk and things of that nature, if they're coming up in Soviet communist Russia, they probably wouldn't have access to those kind of things. So what if she was American, planted as KGB, and then because she fell in love with an American, she was a traitor to both countries, which would mean that when he comes back and says it's good to be home, CCC, more thoughts. But again, it's thoughts. It's not on screen.
Or in the spirit of C2E2 and cosplay, if I dressed up like Troy Heinrichs, or it could mean that Katerina betrayed Russia and then, as she assumed the persona of Red Reddington, also technically betrayed America.
Correct.
Just saying. Now I take those clothes back off. All right.
So that line, I think that line might actually have some meaning.
I think a lot of the lines in this episode have a lot of meanings that we might not unpack for a while, but we did get some answers. That's an answer. A lot of people want to know, why would Raymond Reddington become this master criminal? Now we know. He needs to be prepared to be a greater threat than the others. Right?
Right, because he desperately loved this child.
Right. So this explains Red as a man and Red as a Katerina. So there are two options there, I'd say. If you really can buy into that theory, and we'll talk more about Troy's theory for the three people that haven't heard it when we get to Katerina, because it does play, and a lot more people are talking about it now and accepting it as a possibility, which both makes me smile and aggravates the hell out of me. Well, we'll talk about that in a minute. She warned Red to stay away from the FBI. He didn't. Because you do have that scene at the end where Kaplan is saying, don't do it. You're going to ruin her life. And he's like, look, it's too close. What do you think was too close at that point? Why did he need to do it then?
Because of the fulcrum. The cabal was pressing. He knew that this international group was coming after him. And I think because of that, he needed to figure out a way that he could, A, stay close for that reason. Two, you have to remember, he employed Tom Keene, and Tom Keene went ahead and married her. So that basically said, okay, if Tom is able to turn on me, who else is able to turn on me? So mm-hmm. because of that, he was probably coming back in her life to get rid of Tom. Because remember, in the original pilot, Tom was supposed to die. And that could have been at Reddington's hand, for all we know. So, and those are the two catalysts, right? That you have the cabals breathing down his neck. He needs to find the fulcrum. And Tom Keene flipped on him. So that would be two reasons why he would have to come back into her life at that moment.
Right. Who's the guy who says it must be nice to be home again, sir?
That's Mr. Gray, Newton Phillips.
Okay. I hadn't seen him in a long time.
It was great. Was it great to see that scene again?
Yeah. That's been a long time.
Brings back memories.
Oh, so long ago. All right. Well, now we're at Katerina. And I do want to say that for those that have been wondering what the hell we were talking about, if you've never listened to this podcast, because it's a big episode, so you might be just listening because, hey, it was an exciting episode, and I want to hear what everybody else thinks about it. Troy has a theory, and has had it since season one, that Katerina actually never went, like, she went into the ocean to disappear and actually assumed the persona of Raymond Reddington through plastic surgery. Doesn't necessarily mean a full sex change. It just means plastic surgery. Now, there's a lot of loopholes in his theory, like Red was married, so that wife would have to be in on it, most likely. There's a lot of – he obviously has relationships with Cooper and other people, so it's kind of hard to ignore those. But it is a theory, and it's still technically plausible, I would say, and this episode didn't do anything to bury it, which I was hoping. What do you think, Troy? Do you think your theory still holds up?
Well – Granted,
that's not the only theory. It still is easily. It could be Raymond Reddington. Makes total sense. Everything that happens answers questions if it's just Raymond Reddington. But I do want to point out, you do never see Raymond Reddington's face when she's in the car, when whenever they reference early him, you don't see a full glimpse of his face until years later when he comes to Kaplan. It's the only time you see Red Reddington's face in a shot.
Well, and you have to look at it again from screen versus written word. So Bokenkamp, in an EW article, I think it was, did say that the man in the car with Katerina was Raymond. So he did.
But we don't see his face, so we don't know what how different the face is.
Correct.
You know what I mean?
And through the course of that the early part of the second hour, they're talking about the American. And it isn't until they're getting ready to leave the house because the cops are at the house that you hear her say, the American, she says Raymond's name for the first time. Mm-hmm. I don't know who's the father. I never bothered to find out, but he came and took her. So at that point, there is an American. There was an American that was obviously in the conversation in the fire based on how, again, Liz is remembering it. So we're getting these stories as perspective, right? We're getting it from, in this case, we're getting it all from Kaplan's version of the story. Mm-hmm. So we've gotten kind of a part of Liz's version of the story. We've gotten a little bit of Katerina's version of the story through the journal that Liz was reading. And now we have a little bit of Kaplan's version of the story. All of these are versions of the story. As we say that, it's their truth. So all of this has probably some truth. Some of it probably is how I remembered it. And maybe it's not completely true. So it's completely not believable in that regard when you look at it from that perspective. So there was a man that we know is an American that Katerina had an affair with, could potentially be Masha's father, and he did kidnap her and took her to the States. And then there was a fire. We don't know if it was the fire. We know that it was a fire that happened.
Well, how many fires do you think this kid has gone through, really?
Well, and here's the thing. If you look at the house that Raymond blew up in season one, it was not a row home like the one that was on the news where the fire took place in this episode. So the family home that Raymond blew up was a completely different house than the one where the fire was, right? So mm-hmm. So there's that. So there's obviously two.
That one I'm taking your word for it because I don't know.
There's obviously two situations that happened there. And when you look at it from that perspective, we saw a hand with a ring reach down and save little Masha from the fire as the fire was raging, as the man fell on the floor that Liz apparently shot. We assume it's Liz shot her dad that fell on the floor based on Liz's memories again that were scrambled with. But we do see that after we hear the fire on the news, we see Katerina comes into the motel room with Liz. So Katerina did save Liz from a fire, not Red. So there is for that when it all comes down to it. So when you take all of that into account, then you have her. She's like, I got to disappear. The heat is on. I got to run. Blah, 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 blah. And she goes to Kate May and says, I love you, Kate. And it was like, oh, my God, it was so beautiful. But in that moment, I'm sitting there in the back of my mind going, okay, here is a man who was just shot by a kid burning on the ground in the house. Why does he run after Katerina? And is he really that weak to pine after her, go after her, and stop her from running into the ocean, as Kate May kind of plays out and makes it seem? So it's a little messy for me at that point. That's where I'm like, okay, the theory is possible.
No, because Katerina, when she went into the ocean, was after she dropped Masha off.
Right. But Raymond was at Kate May. If you're assuming from Kate May that Raymond was there with her in order to have those memories and those experiences, why would a man who literally was just shot and left for dead in a fire come pining after the woman that made that happen?
Because men are stupid.
True.
Solves every problem you have. Men are dumb.
So
we do all kinds of dumb stuff.
So that does not compute for me. That's why I still say the mother theory could hold up. But it could hold up.
And it also could just be Raymond Reddington, period.
But then you have the other flip side of it, which is Raymond shows up, wants Kaplan to come work for him, and he's in the shadows and all of that stuff. It's very plausible that he could have survived the fire. He has the burn scars on his back in season one. Plastic surgery could have helped solve for the fire problems. And he literally could have amassed an army to protect the one lady that he thinks is still his daughter. Right. He said, even if you go back to the end of the fall finale, right? Yes, Elizabeth is my daughter. He firmly believes in his mind that Elizabeth is his daughter. That's why he stole her from Katerina at the Summer Palace. So she might not be her father, DNA wise, but he believes that she is his daughter.
But But that would mean if it's not Kirk, that would be a third person, and then I think you're getting too convoluted.
It sure looked like she was a hussy.
Okay. It did look like she might have been a hussy or spy. You know, she's very active in her spy way. But I think that would be too convoluted for the story. So I think it's got to be Kirk or Ruddington, and it doesn't seem to be Kirk. And Kirk seems to be the guy that she shot. Was he not?
You mean, well, it's possible.
Well, I mean, he said that she shot him.
Yeah.
In the early season.
Well, she shot somebody. Somebody did fall to the floor. Right.
No, but Kirk says she shot him.
Did he?
I'm pretty sure. Man, now we've got so much going on. I'm so confused. Somebody just write us and tell us. I'm fairly certain that Kirk admitted that Masha did shoot him and left him for dead, but he survived.
Yeah, I don't know. I have to go back and watch that one again.
We don't know anymore, do we? We're so confused. We got so much stuff going on.
All I know out of all of this, from what we've seen, is that there are only two possible explanations, and that is either Katarina went off the grid because she had to protect Liz, and the only way Katarina could do that was to change her identity to get away from the KGB, to get away from the Americans that were chasing her, and the original Raymond Reddington did die in that fire, right? Or Raymond survives the fire, gets the burns on his back, has massive plastic surgery in order to recover from those experiences, does actually become this international criminal, and he's in the shadows because maybe he's still healing from scars from the fire, et cetera, and because he knew about Kate and her undying devotion over the years to the child. Therefore, he now employs Kate in that employ in order to make sure that she could protect Masha. But at the same time, there's so much language that's used in the opening of that second hour, and then the way Red and Kaplan talk to each other, that it sounds very much like words Katarina would have used in their conversations and dealings.
Very much so, especially the friend stuff. You know, when he's talking about what a friend, his longtime friend, confidant, and all that stuff. And also, and people are referencing the hell out of it, but I think it was the premiere when Kaplan is saying, when you put that baby in my arms.
Motto, 402. Yep.
When you put that baby in my arms.
Now, again, on screen, we see that she gets hired by Katarina, but you could infer that if the American was involved, that Red would have been there also at that same time. But you're inferring that with off-screen thought.
It feels like a stretch. It really does feel like a stretch.
And the thing that would say that, if you try to do that off-screen thought to say that Red was there maybe at the same time Kaplan was hired, a couple after that, you're pushing him through the thing, and she's like, oh, well, who's the guy? Well, it's just an American. It's an assignment. So she doesn't know who Raymond is at that point. And literally at that point, Liz is already a full-grown toddler. So,
I'm just saying. And remember, Red never lies to Liz, and he did in season one say, your father is dead.
Yep.
And I am not your father.
Yep.
When she flat out asks him, are you my father? And Red says, no. So, yeah, there's some stuff there, people. I know everybody keeps saying, no, that's a dumb theory. Well, that dumb theory is getting more plausible as we go. Unfortunately, there are some, I mean, they better answer some big questions to pull it off if that's the way they go, but that would be interesting. But let's just take things as we have them now. We've already talked about that, so let's just take the rest of it like we have it.
Yeah.
And the show sees it. Does not want Kate to love Masha. Katarina does not want Kate to love Masha when she hires her. I thought that was a nice touch. I mean, you see how cold she is. When she kills a man, Kate sees her, and she kind of wants to kill her, but doesn't. And Kate ends up cleaning the scene up, and a bond is formed. Were you kind of surprised how this all came about?
No, not at all. I mean, she's struggling with a man, and she's in Katarina's employ. A man has broken into the house, struggling with them and everything. The first thing I would do is help out my employer. Like, hey, here's a knife. Go ahead. And then, but when she sees the killing happen, I think that's why you get that awesome scene. I can't remember which episode it was, but there was a body that was not quite dead. And Kaplan goes, Raymond, there's a live one here. And then Raymond goes over and puts the bullet in his head, and then she can continue on with her thing. I think the act of killing, I think, still terrifies Kaplan, because now we know there was that original scene.
Like, it didn't seem to in this episode, because I think one dude just disappeared. But and yeah, I think he might be in the icebox.
It could be. I was wondering how there was a guy in the icebox. And he had the wedding ring on.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah, it sure seemed like it might have been the dude that needed some smokes.
It was. I think so too.
Yeah. So doesn't kill her, and it's very obvious that Kate understands that she's a Russian spy because she mentions it, so she knows you're Russian. Kate witnesses Katerina's affair with Red. She tells him to end it. Katerina does, supposedly, but that doesn't work out well because, like Trey already talked about, Raymond steals Masha because he thinks she's his. The fire is confirmed. Masha did something, like possibly shoot her daddy. And Katerina trusts Kaplan and Sam solely at the end. Like, she obviously doesn't solely trust Red. You know, I think she doesn't know anything about love, she says, but she definitely doesn't want to leave Masha with Red at that point, which makes me curious. And at Katerina's end, she says she loves Kate. She loves her. And then disappears, as we know, into the water.
Of which a body was never found.
Body was never found. So now we've got Katerina kind of, that's her story in this episode. We got a lot of info on her as a person, on her backstory. How did you feel about her role in this episode?
She's kind of a witch. I mean,
wow, man.
From all the stuff we saw from Kate May and then the journal and everything, she seemed like she was softer, more composed. She was kind of ruthless, especially when she's interviewing. I actually contemplated killing you. I'm like, wow, she's really a bad person.
She sounds a lot like Red to me.
She sure does. She sure does.
She sure does. I'm just saying. Look, I don't think she's a witch at all. I think she's just cool, calculating. She was trained to be a spy. She was protective. She had to keep her emotions in check. Didn't necessarily work when it came to Raymond, and that caused some problems. That baby caused some problems, and her choices caused some problems. So she was in a bad place. And I think I definitely do. Here's my definite opinion. Okay, no matter what or how it plays out, I definitely do not believe Katerina is dead. I just don't. At this point, what about you? Taking your theory out of the mix, say your theory, however you want to look at it, do you think there's any chance that Katerina is actually dead?
There's a chance Katerina is dead. There's a chance Katerina is alive as Katerina, and there's a chance that she changed into Reddington. I think all three are all plausible.
I'm asking you your gut. What does your gut say?
There's no way Katerina's dead because of what of what he said to Kirk. There's only. Like I said, there's only three things that would make him stop dead in his tracks. I'm Katerina. Katerina's alive, and I know where she is. Or your daughter is not Elizabeth. Your daughter is somebody else. And that one doesn't seem to be as big of a... Except that one does kind of come into play now, because when you think about it, if he did blow up a different house, and there was that, I know what happened to your family from Diane Fowler, then maybe Red had another family. So
there was another kid.
There
was another kid.
Yeah, exactly. So maybe that was Alexander's, potentially. I don't know.
Well, I mean, we've confirmed the hell out of it. Masha is Liz, so that is 100% Liz.
And you know, and here's where we can definitely say that is a confirmation, is the Luther Braxton memories, because I was rewatching that, and when little Lizzie takes big Lizzie through the closet to the tree, they're actually both wearing the same pajamas. So to have them both in the same pajamas gives you the visual indicator that they are the same kid and not two separate kids. Because remember, we were debating back then about... Who's Masha? You're Masha. I'm Elizabeth. Mm-hmm. That whole concept. So, because they're wearing the same pajamas, I would say that that's confirmed that is the same person, the same shared memory.
Well, now it's 100% confirmed, because Kate gives Masha to Sam, who becomes Liz Keen, who raises, you know, as Liz Keen. So we know 100% Masha is Liz. That's done. In case there was any debate, which there still was some. Now, who that second kid is, because there was a second kid in that memory, right? The fire memory. So there you go. All right. Now we go to Kate. Man, we've already talked about her a lot, but there's still a little bit more. We finally get some backstory. We learn that her mother died as a child. And I do want to point out Requiem, which is the title of this episode. There's a couple different meanings. It can be a reference to the Roman Catholic Church, the Requiem Mass, which is celebrated for the repose of the souls of the dead. Or it's just basically any musical service, hymn, or... for the repose of the dead. So you kind of get what they're referring to. There's a lot of references to Requiem throughout the episode. You can take it literally, figuratively, all over the place. So that's a great title, actually.
Yeah.
Now, so we know her mom died. Her father seemed like a nice man. She learns a lesson about our stories are written in flesh, and she's going to use those stories to render Raymond powerless. We learn Catherine Nemec.
To put him in the ground.
To put him in the ground, yes. Catherine Nemec is her real name. She's fluent in Italian, French, German, and Russian. She attended medical school, yet human anatomy was her Waterloo. Would do anything to protect Masha. Then we learned about Annie Kaplan, because we kind of talked about the Masha aspect quite a bit. But we learned about Annie Kaplan and this woman. So now we know that she was in love. She loved Annie Kaplan very much. She moved to Amarillo, Texas to be with her, journeyed to Uncle Nico's, and she is killed. And now we know how she got her name, because the man stepped in and said, well, you must be Mr. Kaplan. So now she took that persona. How did you feel about – well, and there's a little bit more. She likes to play peekaboo. She reads fairy tales. She makes funny faces at babies. She has a metal plate in her head. She gets headaches. Did that save her, by the way? You think that metal plate saved her, or she's just really lucky when it comes to a headshot?
Well, initially when the shot happened in Motto, I thought that, yeah, the metal plate absolutely did save her, because they had just had that conversation about Nico's, and this is the other thing that comes back to, you know, the whole Katarina, who is she, who's red, blah, 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 stuff that we just talked about, but she's like, remember, you weren't here when I was laying there in the street with Annie's head spilled mm-hmm. all over the concrete. You weren't here. So what does that mean? You weren't here because you were dead in an ocean, or you weren't here because you were recovering from a fire burn? We don't know what that situation was or what time period that took place in. We know that it was after the events of Cape May, but
that line though refers to like, you were in my life before that though, to me, because I would say you weren't around. I wouldn't say you weren't here.
How could you possibly know my relationship with Nico's? You were a criminal doing other stuff would be a different way to say that. That's not what you said. She just said, you weren't here after you put the baby in my arms. But anyways, I just love this entire reveal, because we had the conversation in Motto about Nico's and the whole situation. We meet Annie. We know that she wore the wedding ring and all of this stuff. So when all of that comes and said, and then we get to see how that actually plays out, I think it's fantastic. The thing that breaks my heart is the fact that there's this traumatic event, and of all the names she could have chosen for herself, she chooses the name Mr. Kaplan. Now, that might have been in homage, in memoriam, in respect for the woman that she loved.
Requiem.
To keep that name. Yep. At the same time, why would I want to be reminded of that horrific night over and over and over again?
A celebration of her life.
Yeah.
You know, her life was taken, and I want to honor her life. I could see that.
But kudos. Kudos that we got stuff that was said before to actually play out the way it was said. So we have continuity there in that regard. And the fact that we got a Kaplan backstory, which people have been clamoring about since season two in the fandom. This hour was, mythology aside, continuity flaws, whatever you want to call them. I don't agree with this. I don't agree with that. I don't like the mother theory, blah, blah, blah. I just love the hour. It was a great freaking story.
Yeah.
It was captivating.
And kudos to Joe Adler, who played young Kaplan.
Oh, my gosh.
Nailed her character, had just enough inflection to make it very obvious that she was playing the same character, that she was playing Susan in the modern, like in the past, and just enough of a difference to appear as the younger version. Like she isn't quite as hardened as Kaplan is now. And I thought she was just masterful. How they found her is stunning. But I think when Susan watches this episode, or when she originally watched this episode, I can't imagine how surreal that must be. And we're going to ask her later, I hope, to see someone play you and do it so well, you know, and play a character you created and actually play that character so well. Just well done, Joe. Well done, Joanna.
Well, and I will say that we are obviously biased to the Blacklist, but I also have been furious with the Emmy voters for years that I don't even watch the Emmys anymore. But if there is someone that should win an Emmy for a guest appearance, the ability to just shape the character, feel the character, have the same understanding of the character, and oh my gosh, the waking up from the coma hospital scene, oh, the heartbreak. The heartbreak in that moment. I mean, just wonderful job by Adler. She totally wins an Emmy in my book.
And Katarina was great too.
Yeah.
So, I mean, they both were fantastic, man. Just stunning. I just love how they keep finding
great talent. Actors. Great talent.
Yeah. Okay. In the present day, She's Kaplan's been running around collecting bodies, including, we're pretty sure, killing that guy next door to get to the room and get the bodies out. Now, I do want to ask you a question. In terms of a cleaner, shouldn't you be doing this some Breaking Bad style, like throwing some acid on these bodies so they decompose quicker or something? Or is she doing it so that she can, if she ever needs to pull them up in this instance, it's possible?
That's exactly the only reason I could come up with. Why would you figure out where all the bodies are buried and put them in a certain way that you could actually bring them back, exhume them from the dead? And this is maybe her end game she had all along. This is my backup, my failsafe, my get out of jail free card. If this ever goes south, I need a way to protect myself, and this is the way I'm going to do it.
That seems like the most plausible solution, and I loved it. It was great. They're all vacuum sealed. People were asking me, when they decompose, I'm like, man, it's vacuum sealed, so they should hold until they tear that building down, which is going to make an awkward explanation for the owners to explain why people are buried in their walls. Man, it was pretty intense. But she eventually, she does manipulate a cop with a little female solidarity. I thought that was pretty cool how she kept playing that. We see her scar on her head. Oh, that's brutal. And then we get the phone call with Red, which we're waiting all episode for, right? We're getting so much backstory, but we're just waiting for this episode. As Kaplan goes about her day, and we're trying to figure out, what is going on with the ice skating rink? What are they doing here? Is the ice ready? Huh? And Red makes the phone call, and she threatens Red in a dastardly way. And he, what is the word?
I would be super, super scared. Like, okay, I know you know everything. I know you know where the bodies are buried. This is not looking good for me. And then he comes back and he's like, my stuff is built with castles upon castles, walls upon walls. You cannot even touch me.
Underestimates her yet again.
Yes.
Like, again, underestimates her. Makes the bold statement. I'm like, do you not realize that she knows every bad thing you've done? And she makes sure to remind him of that. And because he put her down like a mad dog. Now, this is what I wanted. Now, a lot of people were saying, I remember when she got shot and she lived, and we had this discussion where a lot of people wanted her to, you know, she's still got an alliance to Red. It's going to be fine. Like, she's going to come to Red. And I did not want that, because that would not make sense to me. Me, you shoot me in the face, our friendship is relatively over. I got nothing more to say. I don't want to hang out with you anymore. I love this. I love that she's now the big bad. It was a nice little, for me, it was kind of like when Willow went bad in Buffy.
Oh, yeah.
You know, that's random.
Yeah. No.
You know, where you have a character you love who turns evil, and for good reason, for absolutely good reason. So I'm still on her side.
And you liked it.
Mm-hmm. I mean, you did. Loved it.
Evil Willow was fantastic. So,
and evil Kaplan is pretty fantastic. And how she's going about it so methodically, and she's, you know, going to show them where the bodies are buried. And our stories are written in flesh, and she's going to put him down. And she also, you know, is pretty happy that the mountain man lived, I think, I'm sure. So what do you think? And the story ends with, these boots are made for walking. That's just what they'll do. Clever and funny.
Yeah, I just love how they're keeping the bodies on ice. I thought that was great. At first, I thought that they were all buried in that one ice rink, and that they were, because the fan was on there, and I'm like, are they unthawing the ice? Are the bodies going to all come up from underneath?
But then, ew.
That would be blacklist enough. That would totally be a blacklist thing to do.
How did you like having this episode where nobody is in the episode except for Red, really?
Oh, that's fine.
Like Red and Kaplan.
Oh, that was great. I think it's exactly what it needed to be. It was, again, it's a different episode because it doesn't have the blacklister name on the front of it. And those are the ones that I think are really, really powerful and really emotional. And this delivered on every account. I like Kate May a little bit better, only because the surrealness of it, the music in it, it just felt out of time in a way. And from that, from an artistic perspective, I think Kate May is a little bit ahead of this one, but this was still, from a story, everything I wanted in a Kaplan backstory.
And I would recommend to you guys that hopefully have the box sets or have it on DVR, whatever you do. Watch the Kaplan episode again and then go watch Kate May immediately after it.
Oh, and just, I didn't even
just tell me what you think after you finish those 2 hours, because I think you're going to see things in a different perspective if you do that.
Yeah.
So go do that.
Because now the question is when she's running through that diner, when Red sees Katarina running through the diner and picking up the telephone,
mm-hmm.
and a rotary phone at that, so we know the time period reference. The question there is she trying to call Kaplan at that moment now.
Could be.
Could be.
But watch them back to back. I think you'll have a much different perspective on a couple things. And I'm not going to say what those things are because I don't want to influence your view. But definitely watch them back to back. I think you'll see things a little different. I think that's going to do it. We're going to go into some special. We got Reg Rhetoric and Special Agent Intel.
Yes,
but
we do.
We need to get to that because we got to wrap this show up so we can get going to C2E2. I hope we'll see some of you there. Please let us know. If you are going to be there and you happen to listen to this before you get there, let us know. Email, what is it? What's our email?
TheBlacklist@GoldenSpiralMedia.com.
Yeah, there you go. Okay, now, show's not over, so don't go anywhere. But please remember to download the Blacklist Exposed app for iOS and Android, and be sure to go even deeper into the mystery of Red Reddington by visiting our partner Blacklist site, TheBlacklistNBC.com. With that, we'll be right back with Red's Rhetoric right after this. Are you sick of the endless, poorly realized remakes as we are? And take a listen to Remake This Movie Right, where we take a classic movie, figure out what works and what doesn't, throw a dash of humor at it, and then we craft our own remake. So by the end of every episode, we will remake this movie right. Recently featured as a podcast to listen to by the AV Club, you can find us at RemakeThisMovieRight.com or your podcast app of choice. Every movie you love will get a remake someday, and only you can make it better.
This is Daniel Cerrone, writer of episode 417, Requiem. You're listening to The Blacklist Exposed on Golden Spiral Media.
Welcome to Red's Rhetoric, that part of the show where we play two scenes from this week's episode of The Blacklist, and then you get to vote which one is your favorite over at TheBlacklistExposed.com. Just look for the post for Dembe Zuma and Requiem. Our first clip this week comes from the first hour when Red shares with Liz who his confessor is.
Man's greatest enemy is the dark forces pent up within himself. But not for me. My dark forces had a name. The person I entrusted with the most heinous offenses of my life. Every trespass I committed, expunged, cleansed as if it had never happened. My confessor, who doth now condemn me?
What are you talking about?
Catherine Nemec.
Now, who is Catherine Nemec?
A name that came to represent my darkest hours, my friend. Mr. Kaplan.
Mr. Kaplan. She's alive.
When I pulled the trigger, I left without checking. I would never have been so careless if there wasn't a part of me that wished I hadn't done what I had just done. It's been her all along. Retribution for what I did to her.
Our second comes at the end of the hour, too, as Red and Kaplan have a war of words.
It's time for us to meet and talk.
No, Raymond.
I'm going to do what I should have done years ago. I took a bullet to my head, but I remember what my father taught me. Our stories are written in flesh. And I'm going to use that lesson to render you powerless.
Are you familiar with Master James of St. George?
Favorite architect of Edward I. Do you know why?
Concentric construction. He literally built castles within castles. Impossible to penetrate. You could breach the outer wall only to be faced with a heavily fortified gatehouse and barbican and a high inner wall lined with archers.
Pity the poor foot soldier who made it that far.
The architecture of my organization has risen stone by stone over decades. You can't get inside to hurt me, Kate.
You forget I was by your side the whole time. I know what was required to amass your power, who you hurt, who you betrayed, who you killed. More importantly, as your cleaner, I know where the bodies are buried. Were buried, dearie.
Which was your favorite? If you felt for Red during his discussion with Liz, vote #RedConfessor. Or if you think Red's organization is impenetrable, vote hashtag Red Castles.
All right, number one, Special Agent Intel. The first one's from Ellen Purdy. You're so purdy. My thoughts on episode 16, Dembe Zuma. There were a few things that required a suspension of disbelief in this episode. What? But there were so many good, like maybe Aran was actually high the whole episode and none of that stuff happened. That's what I'm going to go with. But there are so many more good things about it that overall I really enjoyed it. Loved Aram and Janet slash Elise together. Loved the Dembe stuff. I knew he wouldn't betray Red like that. The Aram and Dembe scenes were wonderful, and I love that Dembe was able to take what Red has taught him over the years and stay one step ahead of Red. I also loved how it was Aram that realized Dembe was innocent and broke the rules to help him. Still love Glenn. I thought the Bee Woman was sufficiently creepy and the case was interesting and easy to follow, so I liked it too. And last but not least, I loved seeing Red and Liz working together again and actually getting along. That has been severely lacking this season. I hate it when they are on the outs. Great points.
Agree. Al Green says, I guess for the majorities of people looking for backstory on Mr. Kaplan, they got their wish in how it relates to the Red Katarina Liz Masha saga. John Bokenkamp pretty much laid out the rest of the season, Red versus Kaplan. I hate to be a downer, though. I just don't see how this storyline will increase the ratings. And I'll watch the DVR feed and see in the finale who is left standing. To me, he gave out too much information.
What? I love it. Is that a thing?
People are like, I want answers. I want the truth. Give it to me. And then they're like,
you can't handle the truth.
You gave me too much.
Yeah, Al, I'm gonna say I don't agree with that one. I'm sorry, buddy. But man, give me all the answers. I don't care.
There's still a lot on the table.
There's still a lot on the table, and I'll take as much as you got. All right, Kara Adler, just finished both episodes. Holy crap, first episode was back to classic Blacklist, and Requiem was full of backstory. However, in true Blacklist fashion, it's from Kaplan's point of view, providing another flavor to the facts. All in all, absolutely loved it.
Mm-hmm. Annalise Olivia said, we are getting a version from everyone's side, and none is equal to the other. Red's side is a romantic one, as was Kirk's, and now Kaplan's. Still does not explain some 402, that's motto, retcon. The only one that holds the truth, the real truth, is Katarina. Until she shows up, it's all up in the air.
Unless she's already shown up.
What?
All right, Rachel Towns. Troy's mom. Oh, son of a bitch. Troy's mom theory can come into play with how upset Red was about Kate choosing to betray him for Liz. Because it showed Liz loved, or Kate loved Liz, and that was the one thing Katarina, that's an NXS song. She's the one, oh, sorry. Yep. Katarina told her she wouldn't do. Red would only be that angry if he knew the original conversation.
Mm-hmm.
Bum, 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 bum.
Karen Miller, when Red appears to talk to Kaplan, that was a dream sequence she was having, plus she's having issues with migraines. The other times she was thinking back, reflecting, while Kate was awake. Uh-huh.
Uh-huh.
That's true. She did take a little nap when we got the meeting of her and Reddington in the dark, in the shadows. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Crystal, that's a good point. I never even thought of that. Huh. What do you think that means, Troy?
I mean, it's all flashback retrospective. So, I mean, you could take it that way. I like that idea. I like that concept because it brings in the whole memories are fuddled with kind of thing. But if she's like flashing back, irregardless of dreaming or not dreaming, it's still flashing back. So you're remembering what you think you can remember of those encounters.
And it was on screen. So if it's on screen, we're supposed to count it, right?
Exactly right.
All right. Crystal Holder. I absolutely love both episodes. They are on my list of top favorites. The episode Dembe Zuma was filled with beautiful, heartfelt scenes. And also, I do want to say it was nice to see Dembe and Aram together.
Mm-hmm.
I did not see the hunter doing that at all, so that was a complete surprise. I really like how they brought him back into the story. I didn't think it was Dembe, so I'm beyond happy it wasn't. The Requiem, though, was fantastic. Love the actress that played young Kaplan. I think the episode proves how badass Mr. Kaplan is. I was fully engaged with the story the whole time, and I'm so glad they did a flashback. I'm looking forward to the rest of the season, but worried because I don't want to say goodbye to Mr. Kaplan.
Yeah, everybody's nervous. Oh, what's going to happen? Wendy Davies, there are really no adequate words to describe the episode's comeback. Totally engaging, plenty going on in both, and yes, we are still left with some questions. However, However, I'm not going to nitpick on those because I feel eventually those will be picked up over the other episodes. Full marks to both episodes. Loved the Aram Deba pairing, and Aram demanding that Dembe call him sir was a laugh out loud moment. Great to see Leon Rippey again, and he went out with a bang.
There's more.
The Kaplan episode, I think I'll have to watch a few times more. It appears from the onset that little Kate was a bit of an odd duck who may have possibly became obsessed with death since her mommy's passing. Kudos to the actress who played young Kaplan. They couldn't have gotten anyone better, in my honest opinion.
Yeah, absolutely. Rory. We got some Rory McElmore. That's what I'm going to call you, Rory. We got some amazing insight into at least some of the things that we wanted, as most of you have touched on. Remember, Red says everything about him is a lie. Yeah, they put that in the promo. That made Troy giggle quite a bit.
Mm-hmm. It was the last frame of the promo. Why did you do that?
Why is that? And then we get the backstory of Mr. Kaplan that seems to contradict things we thought were true. Plus, they skipped right over the Night of the Fire, which I still believe is the linchpin to it all. I would agree with that. The only thing Mr. Kaplan releasing the bodies will do is open Red up to attack from his enemies because, as we know, he has an immunity deal with the government. Depends on who they dig up, I bet.
I bet. Yeah, a little Tyon Fowler action. What?
What do you think it contradicts, this backstory?
I don't think it contradicts anything. Again, it's all depending on perspective. So who's telling the story? How are we getting the information delivered to us? So at this point, I'm just enjoying it. There's no contradiction yet for me.
Okay.
But that's because I have a point of view. John Parrish says, what a great kickoff to this season, this 4C season. Two really good episodes to hopefully get us back on track. I'm so torn, though. Kaplan versus Red. Who do you root for?
I root for both of them. I hope it's like Batman versus Superman. And then basically when they come into their fight in the last episode, they both start screaming, Masha, why did you say that name? Three people get that, but they're all laughing. All right.
So bad. So bad.
Linda Hajani, I really enjoyed Dembe Zuma and quite honestly didn't care much for Requiem. What?
What?
Except for the final scene in the Hunter adventure. Oh, and I would love if there were at least one other person that is as annoyed by Elise/Janet as I am. Cannot stand her.
Oh, Linda.
I'm not with you on that one because she is totes adorbs.
Totes. Nate said, we waited a month and got a doubleheader that was simply breathtaking. It was actually 2 months, but who's counting? I thoroughly enjoyed both episodes in spite of the different tones and cinematic styles. Let's talk more about Aram, though. Why didn't he kick Janet to the curb? Samara was justified to telling Aram that she didn't care what he thought of her.
I do agree with both of those statements, by the way.
That's right.
I do think he should have kicked Janet to the curb. So whatever.
Whatever. I was surprised the Hunter came back into the story. His plan to avenge was brilliant and unexpected. It almost worked. As for the Requiem episode, whoa. It's by Joy Lawrence. I was expecting a great episode, but I was expecting so many clues, answers, and still more innuendo. I'm glad the showrunners gave us a backstory. It gave more gravity to the Kate May episode. The episode also gave more layers to the Red, Alexander, and Katarina dynamic, which was desperately needed. Mr. Kaplan's plan to save Elizabeth makes complete sense when you factor in her vow of protection. And that she loved her.
Yeah, and I like that you threw in a Joey Lawrence reference. Well done, my friend. Well done. All right, Sue Anthus says, I am giving the showrunners a total pass on what was and what is now. All of this is good television, and it is JB. Are we calling him JB? John Bocacamp? He's JB?
There you go.
Said in his interview, things change. Spader said on the Today Show, some things are on the shelf, and we fans have to understand. So they get a pass from me. I was never into the canon stuff and mythology, though. I just watch and see what I see at the time.
Huh. And that is true. I mean, they've introduced so many things over 4 seasons. There's stuff you have to say, gosh, you know, we'd really love to go back to that, but we just can't right now because it doesn't fit the current signposts that we're trying to hit. So mm-hmm. There is some stuff that won't get answered. Lost. Anyway.
Oh, don't bring Lost into this. That'll just make me angry.
Mona Jones. But with Lost, remember, with Lost, it depends on what story you're telling, where the end point is, and if you understand what the show was about at the end, all the answers were given for that particular part of the story.
Well, there we are going to agree to disagree. But what I will say about Lost is it pushed Terry O'Quinn into the stratosphere and brought him to the Blacklist Redemption, which brought him into our Blacklist lives, which makes everything worth it. So there you go.
The circle is complete.
Circle is complete, even if the story wasn't in Lost.
All right.
Continue.
Yeah, but Jill, maybe that's where Katarina went for 4 years while she turned into Red Reddington, potentially. Mm-hmm.
Now that would be a great tie-in, wouldn't it?
It would.
Where'd you go for 2 years? I was on this island, man.
Just kept floating around in time. That's why I lost 4 years of my life. Anyway,
and then I met Howard, and he was originally in a wheelchair.
We're all off the rails. Mona Jones said, I would love to have Katarina show up in the present day.
Might already have.
But I'm getting nervous. I think the mothership is calling me.
Oh, God. All right. As much as I don't want...
That's funny. Mothership. Thank you for that, Mona. I appreciate that.
We had one that just came in. Reds Haberdasher says, the best two-part story since Ansel Garrick. Dembe was a delicious cocktail of terrifying mixed with hilarious Requiem assembled emotion and intelligence better than any puzzle you'd find in Red's flat, moving, ingenious. It all fit together seamlessly. Every single cast member raised their game. Please express my thanks to Amir and Harry and to everyone that worked to make this a true gift to us fans. All right. Good job, Amir and Harry.
Well, I think he's saying for the panel.
Well, Harry unfortunately won't be able to make it, but Kaplan will be there.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
We'll tell Kaplan that you liked her.
And we'll make sure we talk to everybody today, and hopefully we can get Harry on as an interview potentially. That would be fun.
Yeah, that would be fun. All right, well, that's going to conclude this episode. We got some stuff to do. So be sure to follow us on Twitter at TheBlacklistGSM, where we live tweet during the East Coast feed, and we use the show's hashtag, TheBlacklist.
Don't forget to follow us on Tumblr, Instagram, and also join the Facebook group. Just search for The Blacklist Exposed. Talk about the show, the podcast, or your favorite preschool activity.
So weird. All right, you can also subscribe to the podcast and share it via Apple Podcasts. They're no longer called iTunes. They're called Apple Podcasts. Google Play Music, Stitcher, or other great podcast apps. But if you're really on the go, like Mr. Kaplan is, make sure you download our app for iOS and Android, powered by Spreaker. You will also find all the intel and analysis about this episode for Dembe Zuma and Requiem by visiting theblacklistexposed.com. Big thanks for listening, guys. Don't forget to answer our profiling question, whose side does Dembe take in the war with Kaplan?
It's going to be interesting. It's going to be a great final five. Can't wait.
It's going to be a gas.
And the finale is 2 hours. Again, 2 hours for the finale. What?
It's going to be a fun month. Let's get it done.
Let's get it
and
done.
Can't wait to tell you guys how the panel went. Please, please don't let me screw anything up.
And subscribe, because you don't want to miss it. If we get the audio recorded and it's good, we will put it out there for all of you to hear.
Troy's going to be bringing his knowledge, so I can't wait to hear how that comes out.
And there might even be potential. I ran into a guy. He's hopefully going to videotape the panel, so give it to us, and we'll put it up on the YouTube channel as well.
Oh, man, I'm not. I really don't want my face. So make sure, if he's doing that, make sure you just get those guys. Leave me out of it. I don't need to be internet famous.
Sure.
All right. Well, take care, guys. We got to go.
We'll see you next week.
Hope you enjoyed the show.
Until next time, I'm Agent Troy Heinrichs. That's at Troy Heinrichs on Twitter. And if you want to learn more about me, just visit, well, about.me/Troy Heinrichs.
And I'm Agent Aaron Peterson. You can hear me talking about movies and TV on the Hollywood Outsider podcast, as well as Remake This Movie Right. We are available at thehollywoodoutsider.com or on Twitter at @H_Outsider. Be sure to subscribe, download the app, submit your feedback, but most importantly, keep yourself off of
the Blacklist.
The Blacklist Exposed is a Golden Spiral Media production. Find more of our great podcasts at goldenspiralmedia.com/podcasts.